Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for 30 years in two languages all over the world, and here in the United States, I've interviewed four presidents, and I've also worked at four of the United States' major television networks. I'm not crazy about what they do. You see, I do think news should be impactful, but more importantly, it needs to be honest and direct, and this is Direct Impact. All right, I want to start with something really cool. So there's this image that's part of American history. It's not our best image, but it's perhaps the most iconic visual of the war in Vietnam. And it's in the news again because of something that some politicians are trying to push through, which I am going to eventually explain to you. But first, though, let's talk about the image. Here it is. That is what the end of the Vietnam War looked like. A war that, by the way, as you're looking at that image, a war that we lost, and that's important. See, I think it's important to admit that we lost that war. You know why? First, because despite what defense contractors, our politicians, and the media who serve them want us to believe, it's the truth, and that's important. And second, because that war was very undemocratic. It wasn't a war that Americans chose. In fact, it wasn't even a war that our elected officials chose. No, it was a war chosen by and for the CIA. Let's do this now. Let's go back to that image of the helicopter at the U.S. Embassy in Saigon, because I want to show you something there. You see that? See that image? What's happening in that image is that the Viet Cong, who U.S. troops spent more than a decade battling, are about to take over their country, and U.S. soldiers, their friends, and their family are scurrying to get out of the country. Get out of Saigon. But there's something about that image that you need to know about.
Like most things having to do with the war, I think the overwhelming number of American people think that this was an Air Force helicopter on top of the U.S. Embassy. It wasn't.
And thus ended one of the most tragic and controversial chapters in U.S. history. And Air America had been there every step of the way.
No, it wasn't. It was an Air America helicopter, and the man to the right is a CIA agent, which is befitting, because if there's such a thing as the beginning of the deep state, it probably happened around the time of the Vietnam War. You know why? Because we now know that the bulk of that war in Southeast Asia was started and conducted by an intelligence community made of elected, or should I say, unelected officials, who had absolutely no accountability to the U.S. Congress or even the U.S. military. So if you're asking, who or what is this Air America thing you're talking about, Rick Sanchez? Well, let me explain. This is fascinating. You're going to love this. They were a secret Air Force made up of civilian pilots recruited by the CIA who reported only to them because they owned, the CIA did, the entire operation.
Almost everybody at one time or another had flown special project missions of some type or another, where they were briefed and told to maintain secrecy. And a lot of times you really didn't even know what the project was. You were told to go to a certain place and accomplish a certain thing. And if you didn't have a need to know, you didn't ask any questions.
But you know who was asking questions at the time? The Vietnamese. They were sick and tired of the French, who had invaded them, occupied them, and seemed to want to tell them what type of government they should choose.
The fall of Dien Bien Phu brought an end to a century of French colonial presence in Indochina.
Essentially, it became the end of the French era and the beginning of an American era.
So when the French were finally beaten back and they gave up and surrendered, somebody else stepped up to once again tell the Vietnamese what to do and how to choose and run their government. And who do you think that was? If you guessed CIA, you would be right. And they did it with the help of none other than Air America, who executed their handiwork from a secret mountain hideout in Laos, a country that borders Vietnam.
And a huge Air American CIA complex. This dirt strip quickly became one of the world's busiest airports.
That place that you're looking at right there, that's Long Chang. There, the CIA recruited and exploited a minority population of people who were called Hmong, who they paid, by the way, and they outfitted and they trained to fight the North Vietnamese.
The United States saw the Hmong as being able to act as surrogates in terms of not having to introduce American troops into the area. So the Central Intelligence Agency gave the Hmong training and modern arms.
So Air America pilots and other employees were said to be, or pretended to be, working for a private transportation company. But their true mission was pretty simple: beat back and destroy the new government of Vietnam, because CIA officials believed it was simply too cozy, too friendly with China.
From the beginning, the pilots, particularly those who were involved in the covert operations side of the flying, were aware that they were at least working for the Central Intelligence Agency. There was no attempt ever to disguise this. The secret was the ownership of the company. And there was only a handful, a dozen people perhaps, out of several hundred that would know that the company was in fact owned by the Central Intelligence Agency.
With practically non-existent oversight, Air America, under the direction of the CIA, did whatever it wanted to do, whenever it wanted to do it. And they also seemed to answer directly to only one person, who was also not an elected official, and happened to have the name Henry Kissinger.
And every night, this information was coded and sent down to JustMag in Bangkok, back to Washington, and to Kissinger.
Yes, the Vietnam War ended in failure for the U.S. military. It brought about the deaths of almost 60,000 U.S. troops and disastrous consequences for many of the people of Vietnam and Cambodia, and especially for the Laotian Hmong, who were almost wiped out as even their children were recruited and forced to fight in what was, by then, a lost cause.
Towards the end, there were very few young men. We did our best to keep the 13 and 14-year-olds out of the line, but they did show up. And there was just a terrible and tragic loss of young men in the Hmong Nation. For all practical purposes, most of the generation of Hmong was destroyed.
One would think that U.S. politicians, members of the intelligence community, the military brass, and others would have learned something from the horrors and the failures that we all suffered as a country from the Vietnam War. We didn't. In fact, that model that was ushered in with Air America as a secret air force, accountable to no one but the CIA, continued operating, even expanded with similar missions in parts of Africa, Iran, Latin America. In fact, some would say that it became even more brazen with attempted political assassinations, fomented coups, and secret or proxy armies. But finally, in 1976, one lone U.S. senator stood up to the CIA and said, "Basta! Enough!" And as a result, the U.S. Select Committee, led by Frank Church, determined that what they were doing was just undemocratic, and it was wrong, and it was cruel. And it said so in a report detailing what they had done, six lengthy books of information they put up. Now, you would have thought, right? You would have thought that that would have put an end to it. But did it? Did it stop the so-called deep state, as it's often called? The answer to that question arrived in the 1980s.
The border between Nicaragua and its neighbor, Honduras, where the Contras are based, becomes a war zone. The Sandinistas declare a state of emergency and begin to remove peasants from villages in the area. That includes the brutal relocation of the Mosquito Indians.
That is when many of the same Air America pilots who flew in Vietnam were tied to another CIA-led scandal, which this time included elaborate arms deals with Iran and a drug-running operation in Central America that became known as the Iran-Contra Affair.
Air America pilots flew interesting projects all over the world. They flew in Africa, the Middle East. We had a lot of helicopter pilots that wound up in Iran right up until the Shah left and the Ayatollah showed up.
So there you have it. That is how many argue it all began. Call it the deep state, call it undemocratic policies, or maybe it's just foreign policy run amok. whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, we can say that it likely began with something called Air America, which is once again in the news. Why? Well, let me explain. Air America's in the news because of something being called the Air America Act, authored by none other than Republican Senator Marco Rubio, who wants to guarantee the retirement benefits of the official official military recognition to those 1,000 or so U.S. citizens, there may be more, who worked for the company, who worked for Air America. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by none other than John Kerouac. Now, he worked for the CIA. He wants to have a conversation about this, and I guarantee you, it's going to be a good one.
In the year of 1954, the United States of America engaged in warfare against the people of Vietnam. The White House supported the corrupt puppet government of Southern Vietnam. In 1965, Americans began their invasion following the aim to defeat the forces of Vietnamese patriots. The Pentagon was confident that the victory would be on the American side due to its military superiority. However, the Vietnamese turned this war into total hell for the occupants. Unable to cope with the guerrillas, the American Army started blanket bombing alongside using chemical weapons and napalm, which burnt all alive. The village of My Lai, where in 1969 American soldiers killed 504 civilians, including 210 children, became a tragic symbol of this war. All in all, during the whole period of this conflict, the USA dropped on Vietnam more than 6 million tons of bombs, which is 2.5 times as much as on Germany during the Second World War. In 1973, the American Army, under the pressure of the rebels, withdrew from Vietnam, and only 2 years later did the puppet regime in Saigon fall. However, the Vietnamese paid a high price for their freedom. More than 1 million Vietnamese people became the victims of American aggressors.
In the late 1890s, French soldiers led by General Paul Vouillet arrived in Niger with the goal of expanding French control in West Africa to the territory of modern Chad.
Donc voilà notre itinéraire, commence à Niamey, ici la capitale. Nous suivrons les traces de Vouillet en direction de l'est vers le lac Tchad.
There, Vouillet unleashed one of the most horrific campaigns of atrocities to have ever taken place in the history of the continent.
La ville de Gungu ressemble à un champ de ruines. L'odeur des plantes parfumées du Dalol est remplacée par l'odeur du sang des populations massacrées.
Multiple villages were devastated and numerous members of resistance groups were beheaded.
Comment peut-on pardonner cela? Comment la France veut-elle que nous pardonnons, nous oublions cela? Nous ne pouvons pas l'oublier.
A young investigator, in search of his own identity, embarks on a journey through Africa. He traces General Vouillet's blood-drenched route in an effort to establish how Europe's legacy still echoes throughout the continent.
So my name is Femi, and I come from England, and I've come really to find out more about the mission of Vouillet and the history of colonialism in the region.
All right, let's get to it before we run out of time. There he is, John Kerouacou. Let's have a conversation about this.
Yes, sir.
Fascinating story.
It is.
And the fact most people don't even know about this. I didn't know what Air America was.
Well, the CIA never even came out with an acknowledgement that Air America was a part of the CIA until well into the 1990s, maybe after 2000.
That's amazing. They just went around America picking out civilian pilots, and they created a company that wasn't really a company. Mm-hmm. It was all run by them.
That's right.
And that's kind of how we got into the Vietnam War, mm-hmm. before the soldiers got there.
And, you know, an interesting part of this story, what has come out just in the last couple of weeks as part of this story, mm-hmm. is that it wasn't just weapons and rockets and mortars and things like that. They were carrying water buffalo and chickens.
And drugs.
And drugs. And, you know, this is how, and I'm not saying.
I've done my research on this, and I've heard some of the pilots. They said, look, it's unfair to say we were a drug running operation,
yeah.
but it's also unfair to refute the fact that we had drugs as part of our cargo.
And that was it. And that was it. And that's how a lot, we know this from convicted drug kingpins,
yeah.
In New York City, for example, who said that they got most of their drugs from Southeast Asia thanks to Air America pilots who were moonlighting.
And then they did the same thing. Remember the Hasenfus case?
That's right.
They did the same things in Nicaragua
America.
And El Salvador and Honduras.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
The interesting thing about this is, and it's an important question, because I've got friends of mine who were in the military, and we had an argument about this the other day. I said, do these guys deserve a pension, and do they deserve military recognition? And they were adamantly saying, absolutely not.
I agree.
You know, a contractor is not a soldier.
That's it. That's it. They were more akin to mercenaries than they were to soldiers. Everything they did was off the books. You asked a very good question. I know it was a rhetorical one, mm-hmm. but you asked a good question in your intro, and that is, where was the oversight?
Mm-hmm.
There was no oversight. These guys were free to do literally anything they wanted. They were breaking the law every single day that they had those contracts.
You think it's the way I wrote this story, because the more I looked into it, the more fascinated I was. It seemed to me that this was the origins of what later became the deep state, or whatever we call today the deep state, whatever the hell that is.
Right.
But that there's some nefarious outfit out there, oftentimes that, and the CIA has its tentacles involved in that,
mm-hmm.
that makes decisions that don't go through Congress, don't go through the president, and somehow affect all of us anyway.
That's right. I think you've hit the nail on the head. And it's continued until today. You know, when there's no oversight, when there's no rule of law, when there's nobody to say, no, you can't do that, then that is a deep state. You know, just this week, we learned that NSA, rather than to go to court and to get a warrant, for example, is just going to ISPs and big tech companies and buying metadata on American citizens. It's the same thing. It's all an extension of this deep state that began with an organization like Air America.
So you can fill us in on how this thing can work. I understand there are things the CIA must do because they are important, and they must be done in such a way so that they don't become public.
Sure.
Is that fair, the way
yes,
I just phrased
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm not saying everything has to be told right after they do it. However, if something reaches the point where people are dying,
mm-hmm.
soldiers
mm-hmm.
are being given missions,
mm-hmm.
bombing runs are being executed, I think somebody who's an elected official, at least, if not the entire population, needs to know.
Absolutely right. And listen, Laos, you talked about Laos being the base of Air America. Laos was a neutral country
yeah.
at the time. We pulled those poor people into a conflict that they didn't need to be in. We talked about 60,000, almost 60,000 Americans being killed in Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
maybe as many as 2 million Vietnamese. What about the people of Laos?
Yeah.
Their country is still completely
We built
polluted.
A city. We built Wong
yes.
Chang with
That's
an airport.
Right. That's right.
And we used it to do military operations, including the Laotians,
mm-hmm.
to attack the Vietnamese. Now,
That's
I don't
right.
like the fact that the Vietnamese chose communism. I don't like communism.
Sure.
But if you want to choose communism and you're an independent country, that's your damn business.
That's it.
I've never understood that when I hear people say, well, they're communists. I say, yeah, I don't like communists either. That's like saying he eats too much. Well,
right.
I'm not going to kill him. You know, it's like, So this whole idea that we had back then, which I think still sort of exists today, is I don't like the form of government that they've chosen. Right. I don't like the guy that they elected. I don't like their prime minister. None of your damn business. I mean, you can change it, but you can't attack them.
You're exactly right. You know, so many of us who have been in Washington for a long time and have been in these circles for a long time are now using the Taliban as an example of
everybody's
this.
A terrorist now.
Everybody's a terrorist. But the thing is you look at who are the Taliban? They are the husbands and fathers and sons and brothers of Afghan people. They didn't come down from the moon or from outer space and impose themselves on Afghanistan.
And they happen now to be the government.
And they're the government.
So let's find a way to change them internally by not killing them.
That's it.
Because when you kill them, you're just going to make more of them.
That
I think. Call me crazy.
Yes, no, you're 100% correct. And that is exactly what our mistake was in Southeast Asia.
The question that I raised, I think, at the beginning, I don't know if you agree with this, but I've grown up, I'm a child of the Vietnam War, I think you probably are too. We all are who are over a certain age. When I watch the media cover Vietnam and Iraq and a lot of our conflagrations, I get the sense they're afraid to admit what happened there. It's like they gloss over it, like it was like, you know, oh yeah, Iraq. No, we invaded a country we shouldn't have invaded.
Yeah.
Vietnam. Barbarous actions that we did there. And we should explain these things so we don't do them again. But we don't do that.
No, and Rick, you know, I've said a number of times in interviews, and I think it bears repeating, I remember sitting in on a secure video teleconference chaired by Vice President Dick Cheney the day before we invaded Iraq. And I remember one of the senior directors at the National Security Council saying, as soon as we cross that border, they're going to throw flowers at us.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to my office and I said to my boss, do these people know nothing about history? And the answer, unfortunately, is yes, they know nothing about history.
We have learned since that many of our soldiers, many of our diplomats, many of the CIA guys who we had in those countries did not speak the language, did not understand the culture, and basically lived so far apart from the rest of the population, they never got a chance to understand what true Iraqis are.
That's right.
Instead of what they call them, Iraqis.
Iraqi.
Yeah, by the way, it's not even pronounced that way, you moron. It's like, you know, pardon me for saying that, but
you're right.
We're so distant from something we should at least have some kind of sense of culturally.
Yeah.
And we don't.
We don't. And we don't make any effort to. You know, these wars happen all the time. I hate to say, but just, you know, in our adult lives, we can start with Grenada, for example.
I was there.
And go all the way through what we're doing now in the Red Sea with the Yemenis. And we never learn the lesson. We never learn languages. We never learn culture. We don't immerse ourselves in the foreign cultures that we're supposed to be studying.
What's really cool about you is you're one of the few people, and you know, you're a courageous guy because you are a whistleblower. You actually stood up and said, no, guys, we can't do this.
That's wrong.
Why isn't there more of that, or is there? And what's the culture like in that building?
No, there aren't more. The best explanation is something that a New York Times reporter told me. He told me two things. Mm-hmm. Number one, he said the day of my arrest, every one of the New York Times national security sources went silent, and they stayed silent for 6 months.
Hmm.
And second was something that both a reporter and one of my attorneys told me. They said, this case isn't about you. This case is about frightening everybody else in the intelligence community to make sure that they keep their mouths shut.
Hmm.
That's what it's about.
It's got to be tougher now for someone to want to be honest because of the technology, though.
Yes.
You know, in the old days, I could, like, pick up the phone. I didn't think it would be tapped. Mm-hmm. Or I could just have somebody contact somebody and say, let's meet at a bar or a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Man, there's cameras everywhere today.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
It must be very difficult to be a truth teller.
And your phone can track you even if the phone is off.
Yeah.
So it's almost impossible. You have to go Luddite in order to protect
yourself.
What does that mean? Luddite, in the 17th century, a group of British called Luddites were angry at the Industrial Revolution because there were new machines that were taking their jobs. So they went into the factories in the middle of the night and they destroyed all the machines.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. And they want to be like living in some little place in Pennsylvania or something. Without
exactly.
Any technology.
It's the only way to protect yourself. You know, during the Watergate scandal, or in the events leading up to the Watergate scandal, Deep Throat, the source, the FBI source,
yes.
would only meet with Bob Woodward in a parking garage. That was the only safe way to do it.
And they left little flowers on balconies and stuff.
Exactly.
Final question to you, since you said Deep Throat. Let me give you another deep. Is there a deep state, and how would you define it?
Oh, yeah, there is a deep state. You don't have to call it a deep state. You can call it the state. You can call it the federal bureaucracy. But any group of powerful unelected people who know that they can outweigh a president.
Powerful unelected people who know they could outweigh the president.
That's a deep state.
That's actually a good description of what I think is happening too often in this country. And it goes beyond Trump and beyond Democrats and beyond Republicans and beyond Biden and beyond Clintons and beyond Obama. It's bigger than all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't good.
It's not.
John, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Great
conversation.
Pleasure's
all mine. Thanks for the invitation.
That's really, really good. And you, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, you hear it when you listen to John, his experiences, what he's been to, and it's so important to be able to get that perspective. Before I go, I do want to remind you of our mission here, and it's simple, really, to de-silo the world, to have conversations like this. We tend to live in these little boxes where we think the truths live. Truths don't live in boxes. Truths everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again right here, where I provide a direct impact.